Welcome to the Retail Transformation Show with me, Oliver Banks. This is your weekly podcast, delivering you the insight, ideas, and inspiration to successfully change and transform in our ever-evolving world of retail. Enjoy listening. Retail is one of the industries with the biggest workforce, a huge frontline team. And it's probably the biggest industry in terms of customer numbers and the regularity that those customers are interacting with any given retail business. People are vital for retail. They are the lifeblood of retail. But given that, how importantly do we treat them? Customers and colleagues alike. Sure, we may say, our people are our most important asset, or we put the customer at the heart. But do we? Or does profit tend to fight its way into the pole position, guiding us in our thinking, our behaviour, and our actions? Welcome to the Retail Transformation Show. I'm Oliver Banks, your host. I'm a transformation specialist, helping retailers to define and realise their ideal operating and business models and drive meaningful change. I'm also the author of Driving Retail Transformation, How to Navigate Disruption and Change. Thanks for tuning in. This one is episode 293. And today, we're uncovering the opportunity that retail businesses have to be a force for good in the world, to be more people-centered, to be more human-centered. And I'm really excited for today's episode because I'm welcoming a special guest on, a friend and a fellow author. Philippa White is the founder and CEO of Thai Leadership. And she's spent over 20 years now dedicated to unlocking the potential in corporate leaders and, by virtue, their companies, all by igniting a people-first approach to business. Philippa is a fellow podcaster. Her show is Thai Unearthed, and her brand new book is Return on Humanity, Leadership Lessons from All Corners of the World. And I'm really excited to talk to Philippa today because we always are talking about people in the retail sector, customers and colleagues, as I was saying in the intro there. But whilst we may talk about people, are we being truly human, or do we tend to defer to financial metrics like ROI, profitability, and so on? So we're going to dive into this without further ado. To find out more about Philippa and everything that she does, head on over to the show notes page today at obandco.uk/293. That's obandco.uk/293. Okay, so let's jump straight on in. Enjoy listening. Well, I'm very excited to be sitting down with Philippa White, the author of Return on Humanity, Leadership Lessons from All Corners of the World. Philippa, welcome to the Retail Transformation Show.
Thank you so much, Ollie. It is so good to be here. It's an honor, actually. So thank you so much for having me.
And a huge congratulations on the fabulous launch of your book. It's been fantastic. We've been co-writing, I suppose you could say, over the past, well, about a year now or so, a little bit over a year, actually, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which has been a fantastic experience, seeing all of the ideas behind Return on Humanity come to life and into a physical book, which I'm so excited to hold. So I'm hugely proud of you and many congratulations.
Well, I'm proud of both of us because, as you say, this has been a process that we've both been through and it starts from sort of an inkling of an idea and then obviously going through to creating table of contents to fleshing out the actual chapters. And yeah, I mean, it's a huge accomplishment that we've both managed to go through that. And yes, it's just over a year, which is actually a huge accomplishment. You know, yay us. I'm proud. So
yeah. Yay us. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's been really intriguing because you've got some absolutely enormous groundbreaking ideas in your book, which I'm really keen to dive into today. And I suppose let's just jump straight on into the deep end, Philippa, because one of the key beliefs in your book is that the classic world of business, and I think retail can sit inside that world, the classic world of business is broken. Tell us more.
Well, I'm going to put a question back to you, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
To you and actually your listeners, because I think it's something we can all just ponder on for a moment. So if you and listeners who are listening to this, what companies do you genuinely love being a customer of? And if you think about that, right, and you think about the number of companies that we all come in contact with a day. So, I mean, we're talking literally everything, our phones, our pens, the products that we eat, the shops that we go to. But there's thousands, right?
Absolutely.
And I think it's safe to say that the majority of them are forgettable.
Mm.
And I would say that the ones that do stand out to you, you know, if you are thinking perhaps of an experience that you've had that you think, oh, that was really good. Or you think, you know what, I only ever buy this because I believe in it, or, you know, whatever it is. And I can think of a small number, very small number.
Mm.
I can think of a few. But the ones that I do rate, I would say, are the businesses that act like people would behave.
Okay. Go into that a bit more. Let's explore.
So it would be the companies that are able to create connection and belonging. So if I think about the people that I connect to, right? So you and I are friends. So why do I like you? Because you are thoughtful. I trust you. I feel like we have something in common. I feel like you're authentic. You're not trying to be something that you're not. And if I think about the people that I connect with and the people that I rate and the people that I think, oh, you know, you understand me. And actually, I want to interact with you. So I look forward to the conversations that we're going to have. I look forward to, oh, I'm going to be talking to Ollie today.
Yes.
You know, that's what I'm looking for in a relationship. And the thing is the power is shifting, right? So the power is shifting in companies. And it's now shifting to employees and customers.
Yes.
Because everybody is looking for that sense of connection. But the thing is that sense of connection, it doesn't just happen. It's not just we need to create some connection, right? Okay, we need to be able to create a place that people actually like. If you think about it, a business is just a business. I mean, a business is a place that not necessarily even people go to anymore, because we know that that's even evolving.
Yes.
But it's a thing. What makes that thing something are the people within it. It's bands of people that are coming together to create a mission of something, to work towards and realize an objective.
Absolutely.
And it's those bands of people that create that experience, that creates that culture that people want to engage with. And so when I say that business is broken, it is stuck in this mid-20th century paradigm where people are only focused on the bottom line. But that is so outdated, because if we're only thinking of the bottom line, then that totally undervalues what customers and employees are feeling, and also the responsibilities to the wider world.
Mm.
And there's a couple of stats, actually. So
okay.
More human companies generate higher revenue than their peers by 32%.
Wow.
And happier people have 400% increase in capacity for innovation.
Wow. Okay.
And if we're only focusing on the bottom line, then we don't even think about these kind of things. So that's where my head is at.
And actually, you know, if you're, let's go for the opposite of very human, let's go very sort of automated.
Yeah.
You can't even open up that, you know, that additional growth if you don't have it. It's really interesting how you encourage us to think about those companies that we enjoy interacting with. I often reflect and I ask people in workshops and presentations to think about customer experience and those companies that you as a consumer have had a fantastic customer experience with,
yeah,
or an awful one, and why that is. And again, those brilliant customer experiences are enabled by people. But it's so fascinating to think it's more than just the customer experience. It's the entire business experience, right? From every angle, both suppliers and vendors, through to all of the colleagues and employees that are built in that team, and of course the customers, and then the customers' network as well. It all feeds in. So it's truly fascinating, and I can totally understand how that human-centric way of approaching business, shall we call it, can open up those incredible benefits.
In my book, I talk about First Direct, which I think is such a great example when we're talking about customer experience and when we're talking about how companies have managed to create an environment of a bank that people genuinely want to bank with. Now, I am a customer of First Direct. I was a customer of another bank, which I won't mention, that I did not enjoy. And this was about, it was when I first moved to London. So this was in 2000 or 2001. Just went to a normal high street bank, hated the experience. And I remember somebody telling me that you're more likely to divorce your spouse than you are to change your bank.
I've heard that one.
Yeah. And I thought, screw that. I'm not, that's just madness. And so I did change my bank and I found out about First Direct. And I mean, and this was 25 years ago, they pick up after one ring, and you still call them today and they still pick up after one ring. Now, the people, when you talk, it might be two rings, but still, you talk to a human, that human talks about their cat. Or they talk about, very personal things. You can call them at 3 o'clock in the morning, their time. So I'm in England or I'm in Brazil. So sometimes the time difference isn't great.
Yep.
They still always pick up and they're always happy to pick up and they're always more than happy to help. Now, those employees are not forced at gunpoint to do that type, to create that kind of environment.
Let's hope.
They don't have rigid rules. Yeah, right. There's not like rigid rules where they're sort of, if I don't do this, something's going to happen. They're doing that because they genuinely love what they do. They genuinely love where they work. They feel cared for by their employer. And they also believe in the mission of what that business stands for. And they make that happen. And that's what we need. People need to feel a part of something and they need to understand that it's not just about making as much money as they can for the owners of that company, because no one's going to buy into that.
It's really interesting because we're starting to uncover the core culture that exists within First Direct or another company, right? And often we think of culture as something that is there and it evolves, but it's really difficult to change. You've got that classic quote of culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Yes.
As I reflect on in my book, culture hates the taste of change as an addendum to that. So it's really interesting that we're thinking about culture. And First Direct clearly has had a culture there for, a number of years now. It's probably that culture that started right at the beginning. Is it possible for companies that don't have that, should we say, that same culture, or that recognize we want to become more human? We want to have those attributes that, like you were talking about earlier on, the behaviors that make a company like a person. Is it possible to change in that way? I mean, that feels like an enormous culture shift.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, culture is made up of humans, right? And so if you have a whole lot of humans who have bought into a culture that doesn't work for the other humans that are in the business, then that culture isn't going to change. But if those humans, it's about training the people who are there to help them understand why this is important. It's about hiring the right people to ensure that you start to create the type of environment, right? It's a mix of ensuring that you have the right human competencies to be able to create that environment. But there's also some work that the individual needs to do on a personal level
and the company needs to do. Mm. And that's where purpose comes in.
Okay.
So if a company isn't clear on what their purpose is, what their mission is, what it is that they stand for, then the individuals that are joining them or who are working there won't know. Mm. So I like the example. I mean, you know, Paul, I can't remember who it was. I think it might've been Paul Pullman, you know, talks about a North Star. But I used to row competitively.
Yes.
And I, you know, when you're in a scull and you have eight people who are rowing together, you know, you need everyone to be rowing together towards the same goal. But you also need to have the cox that's at the front that's sort of cheering them on and helping them kind of realize that mission to be able to, you know, win that race of 2,000 meters or whatever it is.
Keeps that alignment there, right?
It keeps the alignment there. And if people start going in different directions, then you catch crabs and people go flying out of the boat tips over. So the thing is you need to be able to understand what your mission is. And it needs to be something that people get excited about. And again, it comes back to the example with First Direct. Mm. First Direct, they feel cared for, but they're also very clear that it is about an amazing experience for the customer. It's about people really believing in, you know, what that bank stands for. And that's where customer experience comes in, right? Mm. But as a company overall, you need to be really clear on what your purpose, what your mission is. Is it just about making money? Because if it is, honestly, people aren't going to buy it. Mm. They're not going to buy it. They're not going to come, you know, be wishing to come out of university and, you know, your company's on the top of the list of the companies that they want to join. It's just not happening. If you ask for the companies from those grads who are coming out of business school or just out of university and they're looking for those companies that they want to work for, it's the companies that have a really clear purpose and a really clear mission. And they know what their purpose is. They're like, this is something that's really important to me. I really want to be able to realize that there. Mm. And then they join up. And that's when the magic starts to happen, when these missions align and they can realize become the best version of themselves at that place. And the leaders at those businesses understand the importance of that and those human competencies of empathy and flexibility and cultural intelligence and embracing diversity. Mm. All of those things that we just keep talking about. But again, all of that is rooted in creating those human cultures that we need. And those are the companies that will be successful in the future.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you pull out a lot of those it's totally the wrong word, but we're going to call them buzzwords, okay? You know, diversity and inclusion. We hear them an awful lot. And I pause before saying buzzwords because I don't want people to think that they are buzzwords because they're not. But they can be used like them in terms of, oh, right, we've done this. It's almost, we don't want to get to a compliance place for all of these genuinely core human concepts, right? That's just completely the wrong place. But we need to act, not just talk, right?
And the thing is you brought up a really good point, because I think it's very easy to get into box-ticking territory, right? Oh, we need X number of people of a certain type of person, be it woman or a certain color or whatever it is. You know, we need to tick these boxes.
And you can put in, we've got a purpose as well. Tick, great, yep. We've written that on the wall.
Because we've written it on the wall, right? Exactly. So we've written that on the wall. But then let's actually look at it from the point of view of actually all the research that's out there. Mm. So I've actually just launched a podcast, which is fascinating. It is proven categorically that when there is gender diversity at a business, it is significantly more competitive. Mm. You get higher returns. Portfolios that are managed by women as well are significantly, you get higher financial returns from those portfolios. Mm. We know that on any team, if you have a team of everyone looking the same from the same background and from the same gender, then it's difficult to be able to look at the world through a different lens because you're all looking at it from the same perspective. It is more competitive to have a team of people with a lot of different backgrounds and from different experiences, because that is how you innovate. That is how you create different solutions. And that's how you also understand how the world works. So you have somebody who comes from a different background and says, no, that's not going to work because those people are not going to, they're not going to like that. And then you say, hi, didn't even think of that. I hadn't even, because there's a quote by Anacin that says, we see the world not as it is, but as we are. Mm. I mean, it's natural. It is natural. And that's, we're all guilty of it, if you can even say guilty. It's just normal life. But the thing is, that's why it is a competitive advantage to have a diverse group of people on a team. But actually, what's also really interesting is from the point of view of what we were talking about with regards to purpose and people knowing what makes them tick, but also knowing what they're good at. So it's also, it's a mix of purpose and self-awareness. If people are very aware of what they're really good at, then again, you know how to hire people who are different to you and can do things that you can't do.
Yep.
If you just hire in likeness of you, then again, you're not going to be driving your business in the direction that it needs to go in. So again, all of this are the sort of softer skills, self-awareness. Businesses don't talk enough about self-awareness, but it's a competitive advantage. If people know who they are and know what makes them happy and also what they're really good at, then you have a whole group of people who are clear on that.
Yeah.
And that again creates a better, more human culture.
I think for an industry like retail, where we've got an enormous front line of colleagues in, let's say, stores or warehouses, call centers, and there is natural diversity in there. We've got huge groups of customers and there is natural diversity in there. It certainly makes sense to have that same natural diversity throughout the rest of the organization to ensure that there is fair perspective, fair experience and points of view and backgrounds, etc., that, you know, no one person has all of the answers. So it makes total sense to me. Philippa, I'd like to take a slight pivot in the conversation. You mentioned competitive advantage just there.
Mm.
And retail is a hugely, hugely competitive industry. It's in many ways always been a competitive industry. And we're competing, of course, with other companies, but often sometimes with ourselves as well, which is probably a different conversation. Tell me more about how we can use our behaviors as that competitive advantage.
Well, I think that this, again, comes back to the, you know, I talk about in my book, outbehaving the competition, right? So how can we behave in a way that the competition isn't behaving? And to be honest, I'm not all about competition. I'll be honest, I'm much more about collaboration and bringing in voices from different places. Mm. But if we're talking about how we can do things differently, and we're not talking about how we can cut costs or how we can increase our marketing or how we can greenwash better than somebody else. No, we're talking about behaving. And that kind of comes back to what I was talking about before. It's about acting. Mm. It's not about saying stuff. It's about doing it. And now in the world where it's ever more transparent, you know, in this interconnected world that we live in, where you can't really hide anymore. But it's not even that. It's what are you doing behind closed doors that literally no one will ever know about? And it's something to reflect on. Is it something that you are proud of? Is it something that you would tell your mom about?
Mm.
And I think that is something that companies that truly get that, companies that truly understand what that even means. You know, would you take your company home and introduce it to your mom and say, hey, mom, look at this. I'm really proud of what I've just.
Yes.
Look at this great friend I've just met. Right. And I think that's what we're talking about when we're talking about outbehaving competition. It's about how can we behave, like I said, how can we behave in ways and actually act on things rather than just talking about it. And I think a great example, again, this is retail and it's not something I'm hugely, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm an expert on it. But if we reflect on a company like John Lewis, now, John Lewis, I think, is such a beautiful case study. And I'm aware that, you know, it's a different model to a lot of the businesses out there, of course. And you've got the partnerships and you've got all the staff who have kind of bought into the mission, both financially, but also from a cultural point of view.
Yes.
But I think it's fascinating from, if you actually understand the history of John Lewis and where it came from, and it was started by a behavioral scientist, and it was started by someone who actually it was an experiment. It was a behavioral experiment.
Wow.
To basically challenge a system, but it was an experiment where he basically wanted to say, I wonder if business can be done differently, genuinely done differently, where we're a family, where we're a part of something, where we're all kind of bought into something. And we stand for the values that we, and my grandmother, she suffered a lot. She, in England, my family's from England, even though I don't sound like it. She had, you know, she had polio. She had two young children. She was the sole breadwinner of the family. John Lewis was her lifeline. I mean, she still to this day, well, she actually, until she passed away recently, but until she passed away, she talked about John Lewis like it was her saving. It was her savior. And it wasn't just a job to her. It was so much more than that. And I would say that people who work at John Lewis today still see John Lewis like that.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's making sure that all stakeholders feel good in every aspect of what that company does. It's not just about shareholders. It's not just about making a whole lot of money. It's the stakeholders and who is involved in that ecosystem to make a mission possible.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I can totally see how actually the behaviors that you exhibit behind closed doors that ultimately make the company a personality, like a person. You know, would I bring that brand home to my mum or dad or whatever? And actually, that's the fantastic way of becoming your customer's first choice, which is something I strongly believe in. How do we, as retailers, start to evoke the right behaviours, the right attitudes that make customers want to shop with us, right? We're the best choice. Given there is so much choice, and you know, to your earlier point, there are plenty of companies that are very much, we want to just make money. Now, from a customer point of view, is that an admirable trait? I want to shop and spend my money with a company that just wants my money. Not really. Not really. So actually, I think it's a fascinating entry into consider how do we unlock this choice from a customer's point of view by putting our brand personality out there. And how do we then build that brand personality, I suppose? And it's like you say, through what happens behind closed doors, what are the behaviors that we exhibit on a daily basis? And especially in the harder times, I would imagine those behaviors get more extreme, right? If we're facing a little bit of pressure at the end of the quarter to bring in the numbers, and that's when we put the time, the screw in everything, that's the behavior, right? That is forged by the company.
Absolutely.
Absolutely fascinating, Philippa. How can we get started with this journey as we start to think about making our company, our organization, our brand more personable, more human?
Well, I mean, I have been working in this area for 20 years. So what we do is the way that I explain the work that I do is I take people to the edge of their mental maps.
Okay.
And we gently nudge them off and force an evolution. And that evolution creates change in behavior. So to answer your question, I do believe that every single person on this planet has access to their human competencies. That's the beautiful part about this. You can be from Tanzania, you can be from Malawi, you can be from London, you can be from New York, you can have £1 million or you can have three. It doesn't matter. You can be male, you can be female, whatever it is. Everyone has access to these human competencies. The thing is, unfortunately, we've been conditioned in our day-to-day lives and also in our education and also how we've just been brought up and also the culture of where we work or the culture of how we've been brought up, we've sometimes, and I think we can all relate to this, we've kind of been conditioned to think that there's a certain way to lead or there's a certain way to be or success is X or whatever it might be.
Yes.
I certainly remember that earlier on in my career, you know, so-and-so has been promoted a lot. I must behave like them, right? I remember feeling that.
Right. And the thing is we actually need to be given permission, first of all, to actually know that to be yourself is okay. To be nice is actually fine. To show vulnerability is actually a strength. So even just the basic things. But to be able to unlock real potential in this world and to really understand the strength of vulnerability, for example, to be told that on a PowerPoint presentation, it just doesn't cut it. And the thing is you often need to really, truly, viscerally experience something to be able to understand what it is that we're talking about. So, of course, I talk about it in my book. And, you know, I think that's a great start to be able to understand what it is that, you know, what we're talking about. But there is an element of really, truly, as I say, taking people to the edge of those mental maps and really, you know, nudging them off so that you are able to create that true change for people to really understand, wow, this is game changing. This is important. And so it's one, a matter of hiring the right people and having people able to hire the right people, but it's also really making the most of the people that you have within your business, but ensuring that they have those competencies. And so that's what I've been doing for 20 years. So I train professionals and individuals within those companies.
Absolutely. And how can people find out more about these? How can they get in touch?
Well, you can get in touch on thaileadership.com. So you can check out my website. I do have a podcast, Thai Unearthed. So it's Thai, T-I-E, Unearthed. So you can have a listen to my podcast if you want to do that. You can also check out my book. You can order it on returnonhumanitybook.com. You can also find that on my website as well. And I do speak. So if you're looking for inspirational talk around this area as well, you can find out all that information on my site. So yeah, I look forward to hearing from people. I mean, it's a fascinating area and it's something that I'm obviously truly passionate about. So, and I just really appreciate you, Ollie, having me on here because I think there's a lot of overlaps with what we're both doing.
I think so.
And I just appreciate you giving me that opportunity to talk about it.
Well, I mean, thank you. It's an incredible conversation. And I know we could dive into a million more topics, but you've done such a fantastic job on Return on Humanity. It's an incredible book. And I think it's a book that actually, I believe, is going to be a guiding light for so many different companies as they go about this deep embedded cultural change, both as an organization, but also as individuals and teams of individuals as well. It's such a fascinating area. And, you know, I want to say a huge thank you on the launch of this, like I say, groundbreaking book, Philippa. So thank you for joining me here on the Retail Transformation Show and sharing all the golden nuggets.
Thank you so much for having me, Ollie. It has been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. See you soon. What a great conversation there with Philippa White, the author of Return on Humanity. If you'd like to find out more about Philippa, then head on over to the show notes page today at obandco.uk/293. And I'm putting more info there about what Philippa does, how Thai leadership helps drive companies forward and transforms the culture, and of course more about her book as well. So obandco.uk/293. And I'm also going to put over there some additional episodes for you to check out next. I believe that this topic is so vital for both the retail sector, but also the wider world. And so I'd encourage you to really embrace this. Share this episode with your team and with your colleagues. And I look forward to hearing more about what your thoughts are. And remember to subscribe, and if you could, leave a short review, that would be absolutely awesome. And I'll look forward to joining you on another episode of the Retail Transformation Show very soon. Bye for now.